Public News Service Daily Newscast for May the 28th, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. U.S. coronavirus deaths surged past 100,000 Wednesday, even as President Donald Trump continues urging states across the country to reopen. That from Politico. The U.S. leads the world in reported cases with more than 1.6 million since January. That's according to the Johns Hopkins University tracker. Politico notes the day before the U.S. reached the 100,000 death mark, Trump once again blamed China for not stopping the virus before it spread across the globe, and also touted his decision in January to restrict travel from China to the U.S. The COVID-19 health emergency has created new challenges for proponents of a ballot initiative that aims to put an independent citizens commission in charge of drawing voting district maps.
With people avoiding contact at grocery stores and big gatherings postponed indefinitely, Gavin Geis with Common Cause Nebraska says getting the nearly 121,000 signatures required to make the November ballot hasn't been easy, but Geis says a coalition is pressing ahead with efforts to stop lawmakers from being able to cherry-pick voters.
The current process is backward. When elected officials are in charge of how these maps are drawn, they get to choose their voters, and voters lose their power to effectively elect the people they believe in.
If passed by voters, the proposal would create a 9-person independent citizens commission to oversee the redrawing of district maps. Defenders of the current system have argued that a separate commission would risk further politicizing and corrupting redistricting efforts, and say if voters don't like how elected officials draw maps, they can be removed from office. I'm Eric Galatis.
Housing justice advocates fear without action from Albany, New Yorkers who have lost their jobs during the pandemic could be at risk of losing their homes.
Businesses may be shuttered and streets practically deserted during the shutdown, but the bills keep coming in and thousands may no longer be able to pay their rent. Even before the pandemic, many tenants were just one paycheck away from eviction. In March, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced a 90-day moratorium on evictions, but Sia Weaver with the Housing Justice Alliance says more needs to be done.
We're asking the state legislature and the governor to pass legislation that would suspend landlords' ability to collect rent for the duration of the crisis.
Legislation has been introduced in the State Assembly and Senate to suspend certain residential and small business rents and landlord mortgage payments for 3 months. Affordable housing has been a major issue for decades, and landlords wield a lot of power in Albany. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Without legislative action, advocates say New Yorkers and other renters across the country may have no other option but to stage a nationwide rent strike. This is PNS. Anti-detention activists holding online protests across the country today calling for release of immigrant detainees. Maru Moravillapando is with La Resistencia, which supports people locked up in Tacoma's Northwest Detention Center.
People that are in prisons or detention centers are at higher risk than anybody else to become positive of COVID-19. That's why we wanted to show this national effort and coordinated effort from different places to demand the immediate release of people detained.
The group's live stream begins at 9:30 a.m. on Facebook. A survey of more than 1,300 North Carolina families finds more than 60% say they have lost income or expect to due to the pandemic. Released by the group Parents Together in Down Home North Carolina, the poll also found that respondents do not support fully reopening the state's economy now. The group's Gwen Frisbee Fulton says families essentially are choosing between their health and a paycheck.
It feels like a false trade-off for folks to compromise their health or to compromise the economy.
North Carolina entered phase two reopening last Friday, which lifted the stay-at-home order and allowed some businesses to restart operations in a limited capacity. Finally, Mary Sherman reports it's a prime time of year for flooding and tornadoes in states like Ohio. A new report highlights the ways the state is fiscally prepared to respond when disaster strikes.
According to findings from the Pew Charitable Trust, Ohio uses 4 out of 5 common methods used by states to ensure money is available to pay for the costs of natural disasters. Researcher Colin Ford says one especially important focus for Ohio has been investments in mitigation to reduce the impact and cost of future disasters.
During a 5-year period from fiscal 2012 to 2016, Ohio had spent $11 billion of its own funds on mitigation. And we know that the return on investment for mitigation in Ohio is actually higher than the national average.
Ford says at the start of fiscal year 2018, Ohio appropriated $7.5 million additional dollars to one of its three disaster accounts. Ohio also has responsive mechanisms in place for disasters to allow money to be moved around state government agencies in order to meet emerging needs. Jay Carey with the Ohio Emergency Management Agency says the state also makes use of federal funding through mitigation strategies. He says that since the 1997 Ohio River flood, millions of federal dollars have been used to purchase properties prone to flooding.
It's actually better for the taxpayer if we buy the structures, tear them down, return it to green space with restrictions on the deed, so these properties will remain without a structure on them, so they won't keep getting flooded and we don't keep rebuilding them time and time again.
Hoping you are keeping a safe distance these days. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.